John Luther Adams, not to be confused with the John Adams who composed Nixon in China and Short Ride in a Fast Machine, was awarded the Pulitzer Prize in Music for his recent orchestral work, Become Ocean, on Monday, April 14th. His music is inspired by and sometimes performed in the natural world, and The New Yorker writes that he is one of the most original musical thinkers of the new century. The UT Percussion Department and Neef North Organization are hosting Adams for a very special Earth Day performance of his composition, Inuksuit, which will be performed at IIMS Nature Center this Tuesday evening at 5 p.m. Dr. Andrew Bliss, Assistant Professor of Percussion and Neef North's Artistic Director, has organized this fascinating event and is here to talk with me about it. Thanks so much for taking time to talk with me about this event, Andrew.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
First, tell us a little bit about this piece. What does Inuksuit sound like? What's the scoring? How many people are performing it?
Well, the piece can be played with 9 to 99 percussionists. Our version is going to include somewhere between 40 and 50 players. So the audience can expect to hear a variety of sounds. The beginning of the piece kind of comes out of the space that the work is performed in, so you'll hear breathing sounds and rattles and things, kind of that sounds like the grass blowing in the wind. And it has an arc format, so by the middle it's quite loud. There's drums sort of representing thunder and cymbal crashes and all kinds of things. By the end of the work, about 70 minutes later, there are transcribed bird calls that are played by glockenspiel. So by the very end, sometimes you can't even tell the difference between the bells and the birds in the space. It's a really rewarding experience.
How is it performed? I mean, where are the musicians located? Do they see and hear one another?
They absolutely do. They hear each other and in some cases see each other. So the piece was designed to be played outdoors as it was inspired by some of his work prior that was inspired by the outdoors. So the players are spread out over, you know, a few acres. And in this case, it'll be at IIMS. And they'll hear one another. And there's no vertical time that we're necessarily lining up, but we're actually working on kind of a loose clock time, if you will. So the players can hear one another, and we have certain people cueing large-scale events that no one will be able to discern. It's kind of an internal way for us to sort of just follow the leader through this really beautiful form that he has structured, which was inspired by these Inuksuit forms in Alaska.
Is the music notated?
It is. It actually has a very complex notation that's beautiful. The first, third, and fifth sections, there are five. Again, they're seamless, are notated in fairly traditional fashions. And the second and fourth are the ones that almost represent the Inuksuit forms on the page. So some are called stacks, some are called double windows. And these Inuksuit forms are large rock-like formations that exist in nature. And so the ones called double windows would be where there might be a space between the rocks and you can kind of see the light through. So those pages actually look like these formats and they're really interesting. We play them vertically and then in reverse on the way back out of the piece.
Who was involved in the performance?
In the Knoxville performance, that'll be my students in the UT Percussion Department. We have about a dozen players in the UT Percussion Ensemble. But then there will also be professionals and students coming from around the region. This is being co-hosted by my contemporary music organization, Neef North. So we have professionals coming in through that organization. My good friend Omar Carmenatis from Furman University and his students. Another friend of mine, Tim Feeney from the University of Alabama and his students. Some students from Nashville. So there's quite a spread of players coming together. And this piece has actually formed a real communal event for us percussionists because we travel long distances. As percussionists, we're the crazy ones who will try anything. So we travel long distances and get together, and it's become like a real social reunion for us to be able to present this piece in all varieties of spaces. You know, we work together to make that happen.
So have you been in rehearsals for this performance?
Yep. My students and I have run it over the last week or so. They were practicing beforehand, and we've done about three large rehearsals over the course of this week. And then Monday, when everyone pulls into town in the afternoon, we'll have an open rehearsal in the Haslam Music Center for the public to attend from 2 to 5. And that's where we'll just kind of be gluing everything together to make sure we're all on the same page. And it's really more about balancing the sounds and making sure that the piece unfolds in a very natural way and that nothing is kind of sticking out. You know, it's very much an ensemble experience, not a soloistic one. So we want to make sure everything is tied together. And then John's giving a speech at 6. And if we need to rehearse anymore in the evening, we will. And if not, we'll move to IAMS on Tuesday and bring our equipment with us and get ready for the performance.
This music sounds more like an experience rather than a traditional concert. Can you talk about what listeners can expect?
Yeah, I think could possibly be connected to the recent visit of Steve Reich that we had here in Knoxville, and that a lot of minimalist music is completely unique for each individual listener as the pulse shifts and you don't necessarily perceive a beat. In this piece, there is definitely no shared beat. The audience is going to move through the space. There's no seating because they're walking over multiple acres in this beautiful venue. Mm-hmm. And so depending on what path they take, they're going to get a very different experience. They may stumble upon one of the players from group 3, which has a lot of drums and cymbals, or take a different path and stumble upon a particular player in group 2 who's playing suspended cymbals and tam-tams and gongs, and that will change as they interweave between the players. So everybody's experience listening to this piece is completely unique from performance to performance and venue to venue.
What does the title mean? What does it refer to?
Next, it refers to these stone sentinels that were found over centuries up in Alaska. A quick Google search will provide an image that may help a listener understand where Luther Adams is coming from. But these structures to the Inuit represent a variety of different things. They might signify a good place to fish or something, or that there's danger ahead, or their meaning may have been lost over many centuries. So he took inspiration from this as living in Fairbanks. And as I said, much of his body of work up until this point is inspired by the space he lives in. So he thought, why not go ahead and finally write a piece that from the get-go is meant to be performed outdoors? And that was kind of the inspiration for where Inuksuit was born. So it was premiered up at the Banff Center in 2009, and since then has had a really strong life. It's been played in Europe and Australia and all over the world.
Is there a specific intent for the music, like specific message that it's trying to convey?
I don't think so. It's not programmatic in that sense. Certainly, you know, as the drums come in about a third of the way through the piece, you'll hear some conch shells come in. That kind of always reminds me of Lord of the Flies or something, you know, but you'll hear these horns come in with the conch shells and you feel like something's coming, and it is indeed coming. The piece intensifies to quite a thunderous sound, and the drums get more involved and the cymbals get more involved. And then, as I said, it eventually unfolds to where it fades right back into the space as though it was never there, like a passing storm. But he's certainly not trying to convey any specific, you know, sort of scene or something like that. This piece has been played out in the Alaskan tundra. It's been played in New York City downtown with taxis and cars. And here it'll be played in Knoxville. And so through this piece, by listening carefully, you know, I kind of challenge the audience to discover what Knoxville sounds like as we listen to the sounds that this music's presented in.
How did you get the instruments to IAMS and move them to their locations around the park?
Through a lot of hard work by my students. So percussionists are the instrumentalists who play everything that no one else does, right? So from a bird call to a gong to a snare drum to timpani to sirens, we do it all. And so we're used to trying new things and moving large amounts of sounds and equipment. So we have an equipment truck that will move the instruments there. These players who are coming from out of town will be packing up and loading and bringing their things. And then when we get to IAMS, Peg Butte and her team out there have been really wonderful. And they've got some volunteers and some small ATV-type vehicles to help us, you know, in some cases, get the instruments, I don't know, maybe a half mile out into, you know, into the wilderness. And we're trying to set up on uneven terrain, which is not very good for us. But we always find a way to make it work, and we mount the things down to the ground so they don't fall over, and then we'll be all squared away.
How did you get the idea to bring this work here to Knoxville?
I first met John with my wife on our honeymoon in Alaska in 2006, and we formed a really good relationship. And then, as I mentioned, this piece was premiered in 2009 at the Banff Center, and he was in residence, and I took part in that. And then we did the U.S. premiere over at Furman University in Greenville. So I've had a lot of connection to both John and his music, and especially this piece from the very beginning. So in the back of my head, it was always an idea to bring it to Knoxville, but We give concerts all the time in the music school, and they're free and open to the public. Sometimes we get a lot of people. Sometimes they're quite empty. And, you know, after you do that for several years, it can start to feel a little monotonous. So I wanted to use all the work and energy we're doing for a bigger, better cause. And so I thought, why not take this piece out into the general public and see if we can't raise some awareness about Earth Day and all that it stands for, and also use this as a fundraising event for a local organization like IAM. So, you know, we were going to be putting the work and energy into preparing a concert anyway, and it's been a really great way to work cross-discipline with several people around campus and the community.
That was actually my next question. Something that stands out to me is that this event is being sponsored by numerous university departments and organizations, which to me shows that this is more than just a typical concert experience, as you were just talking about. You know, it's also a campus-wide event. Can you talk about that a little bit? What makes this event significant and interesting to people outside of the so-called classical music circle?
Well, I definitely think, you know, you don't need to know anything to come in and just enjoy this piece. You know, as with all contemporary music, I think all that it asks is that we keep open ears and an open mind, and you can discover all kinds of amazing things. And so John's work, he's half composer, half environmental activist. He spent much of his life, especially because of where he lives, it's really close to home, and it's a topic that's important to him. And so I saw this as an opportunity to get out and work with a number of people across campus. And we've received really great support, both from music organizations right at home in the School of Music where I work, but also from student organizations like the Central Programming Council and the students I worked with there. And then, you know, some organizations around campus. It's just been really amazing to see everybody get behind this. And I've met some really, really wonderful people. So we encourage the audience to come out and enjoy this piece with us. Come rain or shine, we will be there in some capacity. So I don't think that you have to have any kind of formal music training to appreciate what's happening at an event like this.
Can you tell us a little more about the music of John Luther Adams? What's his overall style, vision, and inspiration?
Well, he's a drummer, and he was born in the 50s, and so like many composers of his generation, as he got into college, you know, in probably the 70s, he was influenced by the minimalist movement, Steve Reich, Philip Glass. And so those characteristics exist in his music, but they've evolved since some of that really kind of hard-hitting minimalism of like the early 70s. So John's music sometimes can be haunting and have really dark textures and colors. And sometimes it can be noise driven, where it's a lot of percussion, you know, cymbals and all kinds of different sounds that way. And I have to say, it can certainly, if nothing else, be some of the most stunning and beautiful music I have ever heard in my life. He uses calm, serene textures, combinations of keyboards and pianos and things that are slowly evolving, but have a harmonic motion that are very, very approachable, and I think they bring strong images into the mind's eye of the listener. So I've played a lot of his music that falls into all those different categories, and I love all of it equally. And he's still evolving. He uses inspiration from many, many different places, certainly not just music, you know, in his composition catalog, and we're certainly really excited to have him here.
Can you talk briefly about your organization, NEEFNORF? What is it?
Good question. NEEFNORF is a contemporary music organization that advocates for the performance, composition, creation, and also the scholarship of contemporary music. We believe that, and we certainly saw this with Ashley Capps and the Big Ears Festival a couple weekends ago, that if contemporary music is performed with conviction and a strong belief behind it, that the audiences will support it and enjoy it just the same way they will enjoy more traditional models of programming. So we run a big summer festival every summer for 2 weeks that draws professionals, graduate students, undergraduates of all ages from around the country, some where we really want the three tiers of music, composition, performance, and scholarship, to intertwine and figure out how they influence one another. And we also have a performance aspect to the organization called the Neefnorf Project, which is who performed here in Knoxville a few weeks ago when Steve Reich was in town. But we give concerts all over the country, and this is only my third year living in Knoxville, so I would like to think you'll be hearing more from us. We'd like to be setting up a regular concert series here in town, and we've had a lot of support from people for the short time that I've been in Knoxville working at UT.
Lastly, what times are the events at IMS taking place?
The concert itself will start at 6 p.m., which is not what the publicity reads. The publicity reads 5 o'clock because people need to park, walk in. We're going to have food and drinks set up for people to purchase. And then I would imagine either John or I would say a few words. You don't need instructions to listen to this piece, but, you know, we want everybody to feel comfortable and know what to expect. So we'll say a couple words. I certainly want to thank everybody beforehand that helped us make this event happen, and then we'll get going at 6 o'clock.
I've been speaking with Dr. Andrew Bliss, Assistant Professor of Percussion at the University of Tennessee, who is organizing the residency of Pulitzer Prize-winning composer John Luther Adams at the University of Tennessee, in addition to organizing and leading the performance of Adams's piece, Inuksuit, which is taking place at IMS Nature Center as a fundraiser for the center this Tuesday night. Once again, audience members should plan to arrive around 5 p.m. to park at the Quarry Overflow lot and then walk over to Mead's Quarry for the performance, which will begin around 6 p.m. Additionally, Adams is giving a lecture that's open to the public Monday night at 6 p.m. in room 109 of the UT Art and Architecture Building. More information is available by emailing Dr. Bliss at abliss.utk.edu or online at IJAMS, spelled IJAMS.org/events.